This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 879, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan, Nee Gibbons Belly.
I believe it's pronounced Nay, as Nay? In born. Yeah, because it's got the Nay. Little accent on there.
You're right, I see the accent now.
I even wrote it. That was the old family name. Yeah.
Gibbons Belly, that was your Ellis Island name?
Yeah, we changed it.
you guys fled the famine, came into Ellis Island, and they were like, Gibbons Belly, that's not going to fly here in America, pal.
And they wrote Flanagan because they were like, you can still be discriminated against, but it'll be easier. Everyone's going to try to put two N's in this.
There are no A's in Gibbons Belly or F's.
It's true.
Nothing.
That is the kind of institutional harassment.
Irish prejudice.
Yeah, Irish prejudice that we went up against in a time before I was born that doesn't exist anymore.
That is the kind of topical humor you can expect from my fanboy. Welcome to the episode.
I just wanted to make it clear that I am not complaining about mistreatment of Irish people.
Yeah, we need to bring it back, though. The Irish have gotten out of hand. We got to put them back in line.
I don't know that I can disagree with that. All of this stuff about you know, not being sure of how they feel about cops anymore, I think we know what that's really about.
It's really, yeah, it's coded language. We all know what it means.
I mean, prohibition? I mean, come on.
Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 879. I already said our name, so let's get into the other part. Every week, one of us reads our stack of comics they like the best. And I just keep not wanting to make Irish jokes, and I got to stop myself. And we call that they pick their favorite one. We call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book. And from the other, am I drunk? I am part Irish. We are talking about that
you
book, other books
bastard.
From the week. The patron pick. We'll answer some listener mail if we have time.
If you say shillelagh, I'm walking.
The Kilpatricks are Scottish, but my other side of the family is Irish, which is not the last name. And then what I found out from doing some preliminary
genealogy
is that mostly I'm English, which is why I'm making the Irish jokes, because I hate you.
You hate Jews?
You. God. Oh.
That's the other part of my family, you son of a bitch.
Well, we made it 879 episodes, Josh, before the hammer came down.
All right.
Well, this is a good ride. 18 years.
It's okay. We have representation of all groups mentioned.
Where are we in the script? Here's your spoiler warning. Exercise some caution. And you know what part of the problem is, too? I turned the fan off
right before,
and it's hot. I'm already sweating, and we're only minutes into the show. So that's
fine.
Here's your spoiler warning. Can you sweat into these headphones and be electrocuted? No, there's no power in these. Here's your spoiler warning. Exercise some caution. This week, Josh, you had the pick of the week. If anyone's still listening, who knows?
You're in rare form.
I don't know what's happening today.
Pick of the week, without reservation,
is
Immortal Sergeant number 5. I think we had mentioned at first, it was like, what the fuck is this?
Mm-hmm.
You've got Joe Kelly and Ken Nomura from I Kill Giants a hugely critically revered book from one guy who I had never heard of and another guy who was known mainly for his mainstream superheroes and his co-creation of Ben 10. And Joe Kelly around that time had a real like a creative explosion of independent books that he was creator owned stuff. And then he, you know, in comics went quiet for a while. And then this book sort of, I mean, came out of nowhere for me, as far as I'm concerned. And it's this, it's, I Kill Giants was very, kind of poetic. It was kind of ethereal. It was not sort of based in our world. Whereas this book is just about a Long Island cop, basically. And I was like, maybe there's some element. And there isn't. It's about like a family and a cop who is, you know, angry and emotionally repressed, but also knows some truths. And basically, you know, he's got the one case that got away.
Right.
And he's about to retire.
One case before he retires, he's going to solve it.
And he gets a hot lead, and he's got his son with him, and his son is a nerd. He makes
mobile games.
Phone games. Yeah. You know, just completely disconnected from his dad, always has been. There's no love really between them at all. And then for some reason, I don't remember if his dad took him with him, but he ends up in the car with his dad as his dad goes to chase the lead. He sees the guy and he has to follow him. And so they're in Georgia now. I don't really even remember where they started.
They've been on a road trip to go find this guy in Georgia.
Right. And they're following him. And so the beginning is they're at this of this issue now. So, by the way, the first couple issues, we were like, I'm not sure. And then I think that last issue, maybe somewhat the one before it, like it clicked for me. I was like, this is pretty great.
Well, the last issue had that suicide storyline, story or scene that was really great. Yep. It's still, even with that terrific sequence, I was still like, I don't know what this book is. This issue was really good. But I still don't know what he's trying to do with this. I don't think we're going to know that till the end.
But I'm very confident now that there is a thing.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Like it isn't. So we're still on the road trip. The wife and kids have been left at home with the main character, the kid's mom, and ex-wife of the cop. And she
mom and her wife.
Her wife. She came out as gay at some point after she had, or just before she had divorced the cop. And we go back there, and the wife is just mad, and she's shitty to the mom, and the mom here tells you more about her, and really like her character just rounded the fuck out. It was it was really a nice scene, you know, where you know she says something to the son's wife, and she's like, "What do you mean?" And they have like a real conversation. And I don't actually know the resolution of that because she says, you know, at the end, she's like, well, you married my son. She's like, what does that mean? You know, and they're like, well, you'll find out. It's like, well, what is that? Then at the same time, we're over in like, I think it's Georgia. And the son and the dad are in some giant racist-ish Mexican-themed tourist plaza, as far as I can tell. And they're having this conversation about basically the whole place has these terrible old-timey characterizations, caricatures of Mexican people all around. And you see Estee at south of the border. It's got a lazy guy in a sombrero sitting there. And the kid is, you know, talking all the liberal stuff. And then the cop is talking all the not liberal cop stuff. You know, but I think that Kelly really tread a line there really nicely about, you know, like some of the things that people say are terrible and some of them make no sense and some of them do. That's as much as I'm going to comment on the individual issues brought up in this. But it was a really interesting conversation. And I find that the way that the father or the immortal sergeant, by the way, the immortal part, that seems to be just a metaphor. Like, oh, this is gonna be a super cop. It's not. You
know, this is sort of a side bit, but I noticed at the end in the indicia that it said the character's an immortal sergeant first appeared in the short story SOS published in The Rattling Wall, issue 4 from Narrow Books. So that's interesting. It's like these are characters he has return to.
Yeah, like Ted Lasso.
Yeah,
like it was a little thing, and they built something. I don't know what that was. You know, and then as we get to the end, it's like, well, what is it you're doing? And the dad, you know, the kid is like, you can't arrest him in this state. And the cop guy gives a very cop-like speech that if he had said it in the context of a movie starring Bruce Willis in 1995, you'd be like, go shoot that motherfucker. Mm-hmm. But now is a different thing. And
he killed a baby. I think we can still say that motherfucker.
Yes. And I think that that's the thing that the son is having a hard time with, is reconciling that, you know, because when the dad talks, like, he doesn't completely not make sense. You know, he's got the baby shoe and he shows it to him and he's like, he's going to get justice, you know, one way or another. You can't do that. And I just, it's a really wonderful tension. I really think that a character in the dad who could have been very, very one-sided and kind of is, but was rounded out here in a way. Like, he just doesn't care about all the bullshit. He just wants to be a cop. And there's bad stuff that goes along with that, but there is good stuff that goes along with that too. You know, the mom tells her story, which is terrifying, but also really, really interesting. I mean, I was like, the mom story in this wasn't quite as moving as the suicide story in the other one, but it was up there. It was really well done. And I think, you know, Joe Kelly's kind of underrated in that he doesn't sort of do a lot of comics anymore. For a while, he was a superhero guy. He was a really good superhero guy, you know, but he contains multitudes, you know, I think is what came out of this. You know, by the time I got to the end of it, like, I wanted to know what happened next very badly. I was completely into it. All of the stuff at the beginning that I was like, I don't know if this art works. I don't know who these people are. That's over. Mm-hmm. I know who everybody is. The art is doing exactly what it needs to be doing. I just thought it was really delightful. I really enjoyed it.
It was a very strong character piece where you had these two parallel scenes happening with the father and the son, the mother and the daughter-in-law. And you learned a lot about the characters, which we desperately needed to do. We've learned some about them. I mean, we knew probably a good deal about the sergeant. I don't remember his name, but we didn't know about everybody. And we've learned a lot here, which has been helpful.
You had a surface sense of the relationships of the people.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
So, like, there's a problem. You know, the mom and the dad have a problem. The son has a big problem with the parents, both of them. And the daughter, you know, the daughter-in-law does,
but the
too.
Son also has a problem with his wife, too.
Yeah.
They don't really get along either. There's a lot of not healthy relationships in this book.
Right. And, you know, the mom is super self-aware at this point. Like, she understands things, and she has come to accept the contradictions in the way that she feels about things. You know, she's like, I don't like guns. I was a liberal hippie or whatever. But after I was assaulted, I told him he's got to teach me how to keep a gun in my, you know, in my bag and then train me. It was interesting.
No, it was all interesting. And then there's no clear cut right answer for anyone's point of view in the book. Everyone has something on their side, fact or morals or whatever, but everyone's point of view is valid in some way in the book.
Yeah. And, you know, as a metaphor for the society we're living in, I think these are conversations that don't happen, and they don't happen in a way that anybody hears anybody else. I don't think this solves it, but I think it highlights it in a way that I don't see a lot.
It was a strong character piece for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is my pick of the week.
The thing that's interesting about this as being an image book is, as far as I know, we don't know how long this is going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, already the issue is already long. I mean, this is like 30-something pages of comic every issue.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many issues it's going, you know. It could go whatever number the creators want it to go. So
I mean, I'll tell you, if it's 6, I'm going to be disappointed. If it's 8, I'm going to be okay. If it's 12,
it seems like 6, just the way the story's arcing. But yeah. It could be anything. It could be 72. It's an image
book. I feel like with all of the character stuff that was introduced in this, they will need time to resolve it more than you've either got the catch the killer, whatever happens there, that's going to fill up an issue. And the sort of, if there's any resolution to the relationship stuff, that's going to fill up an issue. So I think you're going 7, 8, 9, I think, but I don't know. Or maybe they're really fucking long. It could be anything.
True.
I would say that for me, my runner-up would have been She-Hulk number 176.
Newly Eisner, multi-Eisner nominee, She-Hulk.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Several Eisner nominations, including cover art, cover artist.
I love these covers. I love how they are super simple. They're clearly, and she, I mean, Rainbow Rowell told me this, is that like they're clearly meant to be influenced by those John Byrne covers of the past.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so...
They're striking.
Bold. They're striking. They're bold and graphic. They're not overdone. They're not trying to be impressive. They are serious, but not...
They're whimsical.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things all at once. Again, Rainbow Rowell, this is her baby here. Her collaborator, co-collaborator on Runaways, Andre Genelay, and then also Joe Quinones here. And you had asked me beforehand, what did he draw? And the entire time that we were talking about Irish Prejudice, I was flipping through the book going, I can't tell. I'm
usually pretty really good at spotting where the art changes. I don't see it here.
So,
and they're not the same kind of artists. They're different styles.
Well,
and Joe Quinones is a very particular style, and I'm not seeing him anywhere in this issue.
I mean, Quinones is doing Genelay here. So the first two pages, three pages, the fancy dresses, getting tea, whatever that was called, that's Genelay to me. I'm positive. It's got a lighter line. There's just a few more lines. If you look through that, it's just a little looser.
So is it when they get to the park? Is that when they change?
That was my instinct. But if you actually look at...
Or before the park, even, around page six. When the guy shows up.
The first couple of... I mean, almost like the second page seems to be Quinones. Then the rest of it looks like he's doing the whole thing. So maybe Genelay did layouts and Quinones finished over it. It doesn't really say, but it doesn't look like we switch from one to the other. It's just that the number of lines and the weight of the lines.
No, you're right. The first page, the weight of the lines is lighter. Yeah.
Genelay. I've no doubt that that's Genelay. But after that, who can fucking tell?
Yeah, if it's Quinones, he's doing a very good job of aping another artist.
The last page.
Interesting, because artists don't usually do that.
Right. And he's very, he's got a style. The last page is also Genelay.
He bookended it.
Maybe. I don't know. But it's not like those are like different scenes. Anyway.
This is a terrific book. This is my favorite Marvel book. We've said it before. It's not surprising. I know people have a hard time with it. It's not a super actiony book, although there's a fair amount of action. A lot of it tends to be in their fight club. So there's no stakes in that action, but for the most part, there's always at least something going on. But it's mostly just about her life, which is not that unusual in a She-Hulk book. That tends to be what the She-Hulk book's about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little self-aware. There's this Charles Soule joke in here. I liked the twist. You know, at this point, so it's a romance comic. It's a full-on romance book, and it's She-Hulk and Jack of Hearts. Problem is, Jack of Hearts went off, something happened to him, he came back, and he is absorbs radiation, and so they can't touch, because last time that he tried to touch her, like, he really messed her up because of gamma radiation in her body. So they have that tragic Gambit Rogue type of relationship, which is also referenced here. And so what the tragedy that is, they're in love, but they can't touch. So what happens, of course, is that in the last issue and this one, She-Hulk has come across a charming, is he Spanish? Straight thief?
I don't know.
He's definitely not American.
Oh, okay. Sweetest pea.
He's flirting with her, and he's handsome, and he's all the things that Jack can't be.
Right.
And she's not in trouble, but now there's
the relationship killer.
Yeah.
I will say, I think that first page is they're having their fancy dresses and cakes or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just talking, and then fourth panel, Patsy says, "You're being weird." I'm not being weird, and then if you look at the stuff that came before, she's being weird. The dialogue is off, and pulling that off in a comic book, by the way, is difficult. The dialogue and like her face in the third panel, you know, and if you even her face, She-Hulk's face in the fourth panel, like she's a little like. Like sniffing. Oh, you know, like she's standoff. You know,
that face is the face of someone who's not paying attention to what you're saying. And that's a very difficult thing to draw, but it is.
Yeah.
That's the face and of then, someone who was like, wait, what were you saying? I was off somewhere else in my head. And where she was in her head was with the handsome thief.
And Patsy figures it out, but really what she's doing is she's telling us, because I don't think that was clear that was going on before, but you're seeing someone, and then they cut, and you see that she's thinking about this thief guy who kept showing up, and I thought, that's brilliant. That is so good that this guy shows up, and they're clearly attracted to each other, Batman and Catwoman.
Yep.
You know, and he's not in his car. He's like, can we just talk? Can we take a time out? And she's like, okay. She wants to, but she knows she shouldn't. And, you know, so now you got a love triangle thing going on. And, you know, she kind of can't accept him, but she's
his name is Nicolas with an accent. So he's definitely not
Nicolas. He could be from, he's European of some way.
Right. Because I was thinking, like, he keeps calling her green eyes, which would sound horrible coming out of our dumb American mouths. But if you had a charming accent, then that would be a charming thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially your dumb Irish mouth.
We come back to, there's nothing more fun to me than their tiny, crappy law office that's filled with goofy supervillains.
Eight ball.
Rocket Race, the Vulture is there.
But then Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
Like, what's she
I
doing
I think they'd know each other.
They're friends.
Yeah. And she was, yeah.
I love the Patsy relationship. I love that she is the sidekick sounding board. I love their weekly fancy dress cake. I would love to do that. I need to do that. I just love their relationship. I think this book is just so terrific. It's just on every level, it's so good. It's a great character piece. It's a fun romance. There's action. It's deep in the Marvel, you know, world.
Yeah.
And it's a little sexy. It's a little fun.
Yeah.
And it's not afraid of being sexy and fun.
I mean, it's not even that it's sexy because she's drawn a certain way and she's whatever, and this is the, you know, the world of fantasy, but whatever. You know, Rainbow had said, you know, like, this is a character who, you know, is a real person. And she said to me, and she has sex.
Yeah.
Like a normal person. You know, and that's sexy enough in its own way, but basically she's just trying to be like, no, this is a part of her life and anybody's life.
How does a normal person have sex versus a non-normal person?
You know what? Well, no, I mean, like, it's normal, but in media we treat it as a different thing.
I know.
We treat it as titillation or whatever.
I get you.
Which there's some element of it there, but it's in the background. Like, she's attracted to this person,
yeah.
And she's all in. I don't know. It's very subtle, but it's real. It's also, you know, melodramatic to a certain extent.
Well, sure, it's all melodrama. It's super.
And there's a lot in here, and it's just joy. It's joyful to read. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, the look at the next cover is, you know, the thief guy pouring her some lemonade.
Oh, there's going to be a thing. I don't know how it's going to end. But the fact is, I don't really like Jack of Hearts that much. So
I'm not rooting for them particularly. I'm rooting for Jen to be happy. I love Jen.
Yes, absolutely. To be happy.
But, you know, Jack's kind of boring.
I mean, it's not going to work. By being with him, she's going to give something up, and that is always going to be a problem, whether she cares about him or he cares about her.
And that's the tragedy of it, and that's why it's
compelling. Yes, it is. Yep.
The first four books we're talking about in the show, I think, were my four favorite of the week. It was a strong week, I thought. Although there was another good one I will talk about later, but...
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed my comics.
Batman the Brave and the Bold, number one. I guess this is a new anthology. We don't pay attention anymore, so things just pop up, and I'm like, oh, here we go.
It's best that way. I recommend you all do that.
So this has four stories. This was an oversized book. This was about 60 odd pages. And first story being Tom King, Mitch Garrett's story. Second one being a Stormwatch story from Ed Brisson and Jeff Spokes. Third one being a Superman story from Christopher Cantwell. And the fourth one, back to Batman with Heroes of Tomorrow, Dan Mora, future Batman story. And, you know, I love anthologies. We had that Batman Gotham whatever one that went for a long time. That's over, but, you know, bring them on.
I thought they were going to be shorts, but this Batman story's 28 pages. I mean, it's like this.
No, I think they're almost all full-size stories.
Yeah, the first two definitely are. You know, the first story, I don't really actually know what it's about.
Well, the first story is a retelling of Batman number one.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. It's the Claridge murder, the whole... Joker announces he's going to kill a guy and steal his diamond at midnight, so all the cops are in his house, but the Joker's already poisoned him with a 24-hour poison the night before. This is all, you know, with the addition of the family and the little girl, that's all new, but the rest of the whole murder, that's straight out of the first issue of Batman.
That, to me, the thing with the little girl, from a an execution standpoint, from a formal standpoint, I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
And it was so creepy, and everything that the Joker said, you didn't see him for several pages. The little girl, I mean, Mitch fucking killed that little girl. not I mean, in a good, like, he did a great, I mean to put it that way, but
new way to say that, yes.
Yeah, he did great. And then, you know, like, when we finally get to the reveal of the two of them sitting on the bench, it is just, it's wonderful. The rain, and he's holding the balloon, that balloon line would be curved in some way in this weather, but whatever. You know, I really enjoyed it. I think one of the things about Mitch is that he keeps getting better.
Yeah.
Like, his art is so, like, his art was interesting to begin with, because he uses photos. You know, he takes a lot of photos. He goes mm-hmm. through it, and it was very stiff and photo-y feeling.
He used photo reference. Yeah.
I can still see it here, but he's doing as good as you can do with this kind of thing. You know, like,
he casts actors, and I don't have a problem with it if it's done well. And he has, you know, Joe Bernthal's the jerk at Bruce Wayne's party, and John Hamm is Bruce Wayne himself. So all the people who want John Hamm to play Batman have it in this mm-hmm. issue. But he does it in a way that's not photo tracing, photo reference and photo tracing, totally yeah. different things. And he has that in spades. Also, we should mention some Tom King art in here as well. Tom King did all the children's drawings on the wall of the Joker's house.
Oh, well.
If you know wonderful. His art that he does at conventions, or, you know, when he draws covers, that's totally him.
That's funny.
Yeah, I thought this was the first. I mean, it took me like two pages, so I was like, I've read this story before. And then I was like, oh, shit, this is the first issue of Batman.
That's cool. I think that part did seem familiar, but I would have been nowhere close to catching.
And I have no idea if they're going to keep going, because at the end it says to be continued. But does that mean, like, mm-hmm. in a meta sense, like, Batman keeps going, or, like, I don't know, because I don't know what's going on at this point.
Right.
I'll be honest with you, I totally skipped the Stormwatch story. I got about two pages in, and I was like, I don't care. I just don't care about Wildstorm in the DC universe, so I skipped it. It looked great.
It looks great.
The Jeff Spokes art. This is the Ed Brisson Jeff Spokes Stormwatch.
I don't know who that is.
I don't either, but I've never heard that name before, but it was terrific.
I like Director Bones. I don't know anything about him, but every time I see him, I'm like, I want to know more about this guy. And my favorite thing in this entire issue was, in this one, you got a little synopsis of mm-hmm. each of the people who's in. So it says Director Bones down in the corner after you see him, AKA unknown. He's American. He has invisible sweat and cyanide strength. And I went, invisible flesh. Thank you.
Yeah. I could have told you that his flesh is invisible. Like, he's not a skeleton man. He's a man, but what's made of bones, but you can see his bones. You can just see his bones. That's all.
Yeah. It looks great.
That must be weird.
I know.
Imagine kissing him.
I won't do that.
Like, close your eyes. It seems normal, but open them up and that's a whole nightmare scenario.
I think that the art and storytelling in this was fantastic for a guy really who I have never heard of. I was like, geez. This guy's got it going on. The coloring was even great. I don't really care about the story. I didn't hate it. I just there wasn't like much of a hook there other than the craft. The craft was great. Ed Brisson is a guy who's been around for a while, and he does that great Predator book. He did a lot of creator owned books for a while. I don't think he's like the best guy or whatever, but he's good. Mm-hmm. He's solid. He's not, you know. Like, he's,
you know,
he's
nothing against him. I just don't care about any of these characters.
Sure.
So I was just like, I don't know, I'm going to skip this.
I care about Director Bones.
I like Director Bones, and Ravager's in here, but for the most part, and that's the thing with anthologies, you're under no obligation to read the entire thing. You can skip stories you don't care about. I loved the Superman story. Christopher Cantwell, Javier Rodriguez. First of all, any chance to see Javier Rodriguez draw? He is so perfect for Superman. He has that throwback classic style. This story could have been taking place at any time in the Spectrum, but it's taking place now with Lois Lane being temporarily in charge of Daily Planet. But this could have been taking place in the 40s or the 50s or whatever. It's so great. I loved how throwbacky it was. I loved that it all hinges on this decoder ring from Clark's childhood, like a, you know, like a Christmas story type of thing. Always drink your Ovaltine. I loved it. I really did.
I liked it a lot. There was a couple things about it I felt weird to me. I thought that Superman's sort of insecurity. I was like, that seems weird. It doesn't feel right to me. It's just because he's kind of sheepish in here. And I guess that's the, you know, Lois is going to be the one person that he gets away with that on. But, you know, and he's, I don't know, it's weird that he's writing about, like it was his writing in here. And I was like, this writing is terrible. at least for a newspaper story.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like it just, it felt a little
bit. But then she said
off.
It was terrible. I mean, it was supposed to be terrible.
Yeah. And it's okay. It's kind of funny. Like maybe he's not good at that or that great at it.
Maybe just he's having a bad day or bad week, you know?
Yeah. I thought it was, I liked it a lot. I thought it was really, I mean, the art was fantastic. It just felt a little off from the Superman I know. I did have the question of, this is Batman, the Brave and the Bold, but this was just a Superman story.
Well, the Stormwatch is just a Stormwatch story. I mean,
yeah.
Traditionally, Batman the Brave and the Bold was a team-up between Batman and another character, and there were no team-ups in this issue. So I just assumed they're using the name to tell various stories in the DCU, I guess. It doesn't really make sense. I guess they're coasting off of the announcement of the Batman the Brave and the Bold movie, but that's so far in the future. It seemed I was opening expecting it to be a bunch of team-up stories because I loved Brave and the Bold as a kid because you know, it was mostly Jim Aparo drawing it, and you'd see like fun pairings of DC characters that you wouldn't normally see in regular books, and it was always exciting for me as a kid. I remember I have visceral memories of buying back issues, going, "Oh, Aquaman and Plastic Man, what's that all about?" And buying that, you know. But you know, that's not really what they're doing here, which is bizarre. But you know, I'm not in charge.
So finally, we end this with, and we're going long already. So we end this with a written and drawn story by Dan Mora.
Sure. Why not do another book? Do another book. Oh, you're already doing two. Do a third one.
You know, my feelings on this was that it looked great. It did not look like a guy who's doing 15 books. Like, is Dan Mora like a corporation name?
Yeah, I think Dan Mora is like a, it's like Menudo.
It's a collective.
Yeah.
You know, the story, the tone of it, it's like my least favorite kind of Batman story.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't love it, but I you know, I even like the art being somewhat sketchier. I mean, it's all black and white. It's not colored, but it felt looser and more fun. Not loose in a way like, oh shit, I got three other books to draw, but it just felt like stylistically it was slightly different.
It felt like what I would have thought of as indie comics in the 80s.
Yes.
Or UK comics, maybe.
And it was a short, it was probably the shortest one in the book, and it was, you know, a future Batman in armor fighting a future Joker in armor, and there's some orphan kids, and they all have names like Robins, and that was fine. Like I didn't like it, I didn't hate it. I enjoyed reading, but it didn't stick. You know, whatever, it was fine.
I think it was one of those things. It was just very self serious.
But also, it's like, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, why not experiment? Do some different things with it. And that's mostly why I respected it the most. Other than it looked great because he's so great. Let's talk about the latest volume of the Avengers. This is the Avengers number one. I'm sure. What they usually do is they don't really drop the legacy numbering until the second issue, so I don't know what number this really is, but here we are. New creative team of Jed McKay and C.F. Vila, who did the Black Cat book.
That was my first question.
That's the team from Black Cat.
There's another guy. I was like, I don't know this name, but it's not a newbie.
No, I mean, and I'm a big fan of Jed McKay. I've been reading Moon Knight the whole time. I've been reading all the Black Cat comics, but C.F. Vila mostly did that regular Black Cat series before it ended into a series of miniseries. So, right off the top of the bat, I want to say I really enjoyed this. It felt like...
You love getting the team together issues.
Well, I want to delve into that, and that's actually the criticisms I had. But I just felt like this was an Avengers comic. It didn't feel weighted down by anything too dreary. It was fun. It was a little funny. It was just them saving the day. It didn't feel like we were engaging in a 50-issue mega, you know, story about... You know, Celestials
origin,
or whatever.
The it was origin just like, of life.
Right. It's just like this guy is blowing shit up and the Avengers have to stop him. And I enjoyed that.
A black hole on Earth in a contained thing that they have to stop from being
breached.
Great.
You don't want to get a black hole free. That's a problem.
Yes.
100%. So my problem, not, and these are small, minor problems. It's that. And it's not even the fault of the book or the creators. It's in the old days before you had to PR everything to death in the hopes that 50 to 75,000 people will pick up your book. We wouldn't have known who was on the team beforehand. And the cover certainly wouldn't have spoiled it, because the way this book's laid out is it's the team is revealed slowly, piece by piece. Mm. So in the past, if you look at the old issues of bring the, you know,
it was like a surprise.
Yeah, a new team would show up. It'd be like, who's going to be on the Avengers? It would literally say that in the cover, and you'd see like a bunch of faces who weren't going to be on the team. And it would be like, who will join this? You know, there was always a thing that would happen every so often.
Or blacked out silhouettes or
something. And so it'd be a fun, exciting thing. Like, ooh, I'm going to pick this up and see who's in the new Avengers team. And now it's like, well, they're on the cover. It was on the solicitation 3 months ago. It was in the press release. It was in the, you know, blah, 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 blah. So it's like, why are we laying this out this way, where each new team member is slowly introduced when we already know they're all there on the cover? They were all, we've known for 3 months. So that was my first kind of like, comics are annoying now.
There wasn't like, there was a explanation, I suppose, for each one.
I liked how it was done. Like, if all things being equal, if the cover was not the team, I would have been like, this is terrific. But
you know what I kind of liked is that there was nobody who was like, no, or you had to convince them or whatever. Right. Or, you know, if they started to, she just said a couple of words and like, all right, I'm in. Like, we got past that sort of fake.
The only one was really Black Panther, for some reason I'm not aware of, from some book I'm not reading. Other thing was like, yes. It's basically the same team.
I know. It's all the big people still.
The brand new Avengers. They basically got rid of She-Hulk, Doctor Strange, Ghost Rider in exchange for the Vision and Scarlet Witch, and they swapped Captain America. It's the same. It's three quarters the same team.
They're all movie characters. And, they're all movie temples.
And, you know, I love the Falcon. I love Sam Wilson. I don't like Sam Wilson as Cap. Mm-hmm. In the comics. In the movies, it's a different story.
Right.
They don't have a choice. But, you know, it's just, it's the same things that happened last time when he took over. It's like, it's not the same. It's dumb having two Captains America. In the lineup, they all have nicknames. He's called the Icon. He's not the Icon. Steve's the Icon. He's something else. He's the Legacy, maybe, but not the Icon. Mm-hmm. I just hate that it's so movie influenced, and I hate that Steve's not there. However, putting that aside, this was really fun, and I liked it a lot. And I'm excited to read Avengers again.
Headline here. Vision is back in an Avengers comic.
Yes.
And Scarlet Witch. Vision is like, he's supposed to be an Avenger.
Yeah.
And
he's
their
Martian Manhunter.
And it made me go, well, wait, where the hell's he been? I have no idea. I feel like the last time I saw him was in Tom King's Vision series. You know, he has not been
that was
part
45
of,
years ago.
Right, exactly. I feel like he has not been part of the Marvel Universe, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I guess it's the subhead, the thing that they did not put on the cover, the big reveal at the end. And I love how it happened. Carol, by the way, Captain Marvel as head of the Avengers. I'm down. You know that. You know I love Captain Marvel.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, apparently everyone who's ever been an Avenger gets to vote. Like apparently, like on an app. It's like the patron pick. Who's going to be Who's going to be the Avengers chairman? Every patron gets a vote.
And they built the app because Tony's had her her logo, symbol on it. And I was like, well, geez, you really went for it with this. Anyway, she gets the singularity gets her and she's in some weird place. And then who steps out but a very ravaged Nathaniel Richards, otherwise known as Immortus, otherwise known as Ramatut, otherwise known as the Master of Time, Kang himself. And this is a follow-up to a really wonderful issue, Timeless number one. That came out quite a while ago about Kang that I, you know, like it's said to be continued. And you're like, when? Because it has been 3 months or something like that. And this picks up from that. I don't remember what happened in that other than I really liked it. And I thought, well, hot damn.
He's dying. He says he's dying. He's bleeding. Yeah. He says this is Kang's deathbed. And I was excited too. I mean, I just thought this was super fun. And, you know, for whatever reason, the Jason Aaron run didn't work for me. I read almost all of it. It never really clicked. It never felt like this, which was just like, hey, just do a fun story, action-packed with great characters having a good time. Like, I'm over, and that's the other thing that's, again, not their fault, I'm sick of sad Thor. Like, bring back happy fun Thor. Like, we have enough sad characters.
I really liked the reasoning, like why he's gotta do it. You know, I don't know, I got all this stuff. And she goes, your life is so long, and there's something about immortal short lives that stirs something in you. He's like, barely. And there we go.
It was a good comic.
Yeah, it was.
I don't know what I would pick this pick of the week, but it was in my head discussion. That's for sure. Since we're long, I'm just going to do this real quick. Hey, if you enjoy the show, despite all the racial slurs that has opened it up, but it was mostly against the Irish, so that's fine. They were probably too drunk to understand what I was saying. Anyway, Think about supporting the show at Patreon. Again.
Not since the Canadian stuff of the early 2010s. Oh, man.
We took so much heat for that. Again, I'm mostly Irish, so. I'm not mostly Irish. I'm partially Irish, so there you go.
Yeah, okay. as a mostly Irish person, I think you're full of shit.
I'm also a dentist. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can support the show directly, become part of a great community, unlock shows for everybody. We are in the final round of design for the last piece of our redesigned Patreon. We're going to add a bunch of new rewards and things, and we're just working with a designer on something, and when that happens, we'll have a bunch of new exciting things for patrons, so hopefully you'll enjoy those. This next weekend, we're having our patron hangout. If you want to become a part of that, you have a week to become a patron. Even at the $1 level, you can come hang out with us once a month online. So, or Josh's house. We're going to have a big patron bonanza at Josh's house at the end of the year. Look forward to that every year.
Fuck it.
And thanks for being a patron. ifanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store. ifanboy.com/support is our PayPal digital tip jar. ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you can find our Booksplode books and a general shopping link. I just updated that with the newest Booksplode book, the Cavalier and Clay. And finally, bookshop.org is our partner to help support local bookstores. And you can find those links usually in the Booksplode posts, but sometimes other places if there's appropriate places to put them. So thanks for supporting the show. Let's move on. I don't even know what this book is.
Order and Outrage is coming out from the folks at Dark Horse. And I solely got it because it's by Jim Starlin.
He's awesome.
Jim Starlin is awesome, with art by Rags Morales.
He killed Jason Todd.
And I just was like, well, what's Jim Starlin doing right now?
Yeah.
And I have no idea if it's any good or not. I don't really know what it is. It's there's a lady in space, and all the people on her ship died, and she ends up on some planet, and she touches something, and she turns into some space god thing, whatever. It's very big cosmic. It's kind of throwbacky. Yeah, it's kind of what you think. And I don't know that I like it as much as I am intensely curious what this guy who defined so much of Marvel Comics 40-something years ago.
But also up through the 90s, really, because he was doing Silver Surfer and all that stuff was really important up through. So like 20 years of basically owning cosmic Marvel and defining it for literally a generation.
Killing Captain Marvel, you know.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want to do a story. I'm going to take it over to Dark Horse. Again, I'm not entirely sure it's good, but I find it very interesting. Just
how's Rex Morales?
As a legend, it's not. I don't think it's recognizable as the Rags Morales of old. Really, it has.
He was very distinctive before in the early 2000s.
It has a. It's again. The coloring isn't awesome. It's a little overwrought, and I think that takes away from the art. Of a guy. Actually, I think the coloring is kind of my problem here. It looks like low budget sci-fi comics. Kind of what it looks like. But the storytelling is pretty strong, but it's also throwbacky. Like it's very melodramatic and serious. There's nothing funny in this. You know, people have crazy Matrixius, you know, like
it's hard sci-fi. It's,
yeah. Yeah. Well, no, isn't it hard sci-fi is when it's real. Like the Expanse, with the exception of the zombie aliens. Although even that is sort of linked to you know what I mean. Like that when it's real science, but projected way out.
Can we take a tangent for a second,
please?
I know we're long. This is probably going to kill the emails, but whatever. In college, I was in a screenwriting class with our buddy Simmons, and we sat in that classroom that had like the U shaped. It was like U shaped, so you would sit in the U facing the professor. And, you know, we were writing scripts and we all had to do like a reading of the first couple of pages of our script. And Simmons sat to my left, and to the left of him was this other dude. I forgot his name, but I was friendly with him. He's a nice guy. And he wrote the super dry, super hardcore sci-fi script that the first like 5 or 6 pages was just talking about like buttons being pushed and things happening, like no characters, nothing.
It was a script and not prose.
No, it was a script. It was just stage direction. And, you know, at the beginning of Star Trek, the movie, which is just like 10 minutes of the ship docking. And Simmons was talking to some girl at a party who was also in our class. And she was like, what do you think of the scripts? And, you know, what do you think of my script? And what do you think of my buddy Connor's script? And he's the one that sits next to me. And she was like, oh my God, it was so terrible. And it turns out she was thinking that it was I was the other guy, but I was not the other guy. And my script was not terrible. But that's just what I think of whenever I think of hard sci-fi, is that guy who, for 1 minute, that girl thought I was his boring sci-fi script.
Can I take another tangent?
Yeah,
this is literally, I just want to share something with you, but I find that the audience will probably think it's relevant.
Okay.
So I'm watching the Justice League with my son. And
cartoon.
I don't know if you remember. Yeah, the cartoon. I don't know if you remember.
Maybe Super into Zack Snyder. I don't know.
In the second, not my house, sir. all right, it's a two-parter about a princess of a made-up country who marries Vandal Savage. And there is an amazing sequence where she's getting married and all you hear is the audio and the music from the wedding. And then outside, Wonder Woman is just destroying bitches and Batman comes in with his plane and you don't hear the audio from that. And I was like, this is some Godfather shit. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Dwayne McDuffie wrote this. Anyway,
good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah. Later in the episode, the Flash is sucked out into space, like just with nothing on. And I said, he'd freeze instantly and die. And then he was out there forever. I was like, how is he not dead? And my son, Henry, who is 9, and I have never said anything like this to him. He got it on his own. He goes, it's a cartoon. I was like, fuck. I was so proud. I was like, holy shit.
He's like, shut up, Dad.
It's a cartoon. And like, I don't talk like that to them. Like that he didn't get it from me directly. He just had it. And I was like, oh my God, it's my son. I was so proud. You have no idea.
Let's move on to Fantastic Four 700 or 7. They clearly planned this. Ryan North, Ebon Coelho for the big oversized, not very oversized, double sized, basically.
Maybe this is why they added those two weird issues to the end of the last volume of it.
I think so. Just to make the numbers work.
Smart.
This was good. Like, if this was a regular issue, I'd be like, that was cool. But as a 700th issue, this was kind of disappointing. Like, it didn't feel like big enough to sort of encapsulate their legacy. And I know at this, you know, in this issue, Doom shows up and he was great. And Ryan North writes a great Doom, but and he ends up time traveling and kind of bounces around through their history, but kind of doesn't.
That just Doom time travel sequence and him, that was wonderful. That's 700 because it was great Doom.
Yeah, Doom couldn't fix time. Like, he's all mad because his goddaughter is Valeria. He feels very close to her. And Valeria's been in that time bubble that is going to be gone for an entire calendar year. And so Doom's like, Richards, what did you do? Took away my goddaughter for a full year. This cannot stand. And so he goes back in time to fix it. But no matter what he does, he can't stop it from happening. And so that's the tragedy of Doom.
So he stops. He has to stop Doom from trying to stop him.
Yeah, just to stop himself from trying to stop. It got very convoluted. But
that's great.
This was a good issue. It just was like, that was the 700th issue. But whatever. I don't, you know.
So we have Guardians of the Galaxy 182. This would be issue number 2 of this volume. Team. Yes, it is. It's Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, unless I mix those things up.
And what's his name? Kev Walker.
Yes, Kev Walker. Who is always magnificent. That's actually why I probably started reading. But also, I was like, well, let's see a Guardians of the Galaxy book. It's been a little while since there's been, like, this is the main team, although it occurred to me a little ways through, I was like, where the fuck is Rocket? And I look at it, I was like, oh, Rocket's dead. Of course he is. You know, and to me, I think one of the interesting parts was seeing how much the movie affected those versions of the characters, because they're quite different. Peter Quill is not Chris Pratt in these books. And I thought it was a pretty good treading of that line. It was a little of it, but they didn't make him, you know, the same character. You know,
he
same
was
with
for
Drax.
A while, so this is kind of a shift.
Yeah, I don't know. It was fairly subtle. It's okay. I want to like it. It's a Kev Walker book, so I'm not going anywhere because it's great looking. The idea basically
the way he draws
is
that lobster guy, like, and all credit also to the colorist who I don't know because it's not in the script. But
God, you're such.
Would you get drunk and do the script, you Irish bastard, Matt? How long's it worth?
Well, he's a pro. I was hanging out with my son, and I ran out of time, so I had to do it.
He was
with
talking
him.
To me about cartoons. The way he drew the texture on this lobster guy was so visceral, and you could sort of feel it, hear it, and it was great. I thought this issue was just fine. Like, I liked the first issue quite a bit, which is why I kept reading it. But I thought this issue was just kind of blah.
Yeah, I think the concept
really care
of,
about anything happened in it.
Root fall, whatever it is.
I don't like that
kinda,
at all.
It's kind of great because, like, I like the idea that in Marvel, at least, like, Groot is just this fucking force of nature. You know, like, there's kind of anything he can be anything or whatever. You know, what it'll come back around. It'll be fine. I just like that it's a big cosmic threat, but it's also their friend.
Yeah, I'm not off the book. I just, this issue was like, okay, fine. Like, I didn't love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
looks great. Let's do this.
Let's Patreon pick time. Those are the books we wanted to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, they can vote to decide who the chairman of the Avengers is and also add a book to the rundown. It's called the Patreon Pick. Every patron gets a vote. This week, the winner was Titans number one from DC Comics, Tom Taylor, Nicola Scott, Annette Kwok, Wes Abbott. This is the spinoff book from the Tom Taylor's Nightwing series in which Nightwing has gathered. And I don't realize it because there's been so many fucking Titans lineups. But it occurred to me this week that this is the actual original lineup of the new Teen Titans, the classic Marv Wolfman, George Perez series that dominated sales in the 80s, top selling DC book.
If you're younger, the Teen Titans Go team.
But Donna Troy wasn't on that team.
No, but.
Or Flash.
Yeah, it's true. They showed up at some point.
But this is the original team. And before we get started, we never talk about the covers. I love Nicola Scott. I think she's a terrific artist. I like that individuality she brings to characters, even if I don't always like the way she does it. I like the intention. I think she's great. She's a charming person. We interviewed her several times. I think she's terrific. This cover is just so boring and not striking. It's like the opposite of that She-Hulk cover. Mm-hmm. The coloring is very muted, and I looked at it compared to the first cover of the new Teen Titans, I think back in 82 or 83. I don't remember what year it was. And it's just such a different look and feel. It just so encapsulates the difference in the comic book eras where that one's like bright and action-packed. The Titans are running at you. There's villains in the foreground just off camera who they're coming at. There's you know, not dialogue, but captions on the cover. First exciting new issue. Like, it was like just popping with life and action, adventure, and goshiness. And this is just sort of like, we are walking at you very dourly. Two of the characters are looking over my shoulder. Donna Troy and Beast Boy are looking over my left shoulder. Everybody else has got white people, so I can't tell where they're looking. But it just is so bizarre.
Well, I think one of the main sort of signposts for this is that in those old books, and I have complained about this in modern comics, those old books, when everybody came at you, it didn't really quite make sense how they were standing. Like, they were just placed so that you could see them all.
Right.
And I specifically, like, I think it was one of Brian Bendis's Secret Invasion books. I was like, why are they like this? No one would be like this. But in hindsight, the metaphor here is that, like, they're trying to ground the book so much that the people have to walk on the ground at you and you have to see how they are set on the ground. Whereas before it was like, look at all these people. Why are they where? Yep. It doesn't matter. Look at them. You know, and now as well, it has to make sense. And it just, like, it sucks the air out of it. Anyway, that's not, that doesn't really figure into the book, but it's an interesting.
It's fine. I just noticed that. Like, this is such a dull cover. But anyway.
Where's Nicola Scott been?
She's showed up here and there doing things now and again, but she's, you know, she's Australian. She probably has things to do in Australia that we don't know about.
I mean, exciting if things. She's in Australia, I can guarantee that she has things to do in Australia.
She's never really been a long-term regular artist, right? She's always coming on.
She had a hot period where she was teamed
but
up
she's
with
never, even Marvel. Back then, she couldn't keep up a monthly schedule because she's, you
that's
know,
her true. She said that.
Yeah. So, you know, and she did, you know, Earth 2, she's the Wonder Woman, she's done things.
They're both Australian, so they can talk to each other in real time.
That's true.
Just occurred to me.
This was fun. I like this. This, you know, it's another gathering, not gathering the team, their team's gathered other than they're trying to recruit Tempest or Aqualad, but he's the George Harrison of the original Titans and says, no thanks. I don't want to be part of this
team. I'm not going with you. I've got to deal with the ocean. It's three quarters of the earth, you know.
He really is. He's the George Harrison of the team.
It's true because George Harrison's like, I'm just going to go garden. I don't want to do any of this. I'm supposed to be at sea for 2 weeks with these people.
So the other day, I wanted really wanted to rewatch that, but it was like 11 o'clock at night, and it would have taken me until 6 in the morning.
Sure.
You know, they've got a new Titans Tower. It's in Bloodhaven. The team is back together. Beast Boy and Raven are in a relationship. Whenever she takes her hood off, I get freaked out. Like, is that what she looks like?
I didn't know who the fuck that was because he was calling her.
I didn't either.
Ray. I was like, who's this?
Who is that? You know, it was fun. It was a giant gorilla that was almost going to cause a nuclear reaction. And the only thing that made me roll my eyes was Peacemaker showing up. I was like, oh, is this going to be a thing now? Is Peacemaker going to be everybody's bad guy?
Do you think it was weird that the giant gorilla whose name is, I think it's Titanus, whatever it is. Yeah. I was like, well, he's a Titan too. That's weird. The villain they chose were as the same Titano. I was like, he's got the same name as the main characters. That's weird.
Well, that's but the thing I with the Titans is they only fight villains who also have Titan in the name.
I love that he was getting his ass beat. Like it was slowly revealing that it was like he's a robot under there.
Yeah.
It's a giant gorilla. Or I don't know if he's a robot or he's a cyborg.
Yeah, he hits him in the eye and there's like a glowing eye.
Yeah, cool stuff.
And the wraparound is that Wally's been shot and he's about to die. He goes to tell his wife, who's suddenly not Asian, that he loves her. And and at the end, they find him, you know, laying in a pool of blood in the Titans Tower with the word solve it on all the monitors. I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Tom Taylor's terrific. He really clearly likes all these characters. This is a very sort of standard. This didn't blow my socks off. This wasn't like the, you know, Tom Taylor's first issue of Nightwing where we were all like, holy shit. This was good. I liked it. The art was good. I'm curious to see who the other artists will be for the other art issues, like Nicola. You know, Bruno Rotondo couldn't do every issue either, so there'll be another artist.
Right.
You know.
So
the problem is, though, that the team, the Titans, was always like the soap opera personified, right? They were all in love with each other. There was relationships. There was infighting. There was all this stuff. And now they're all sort of older and more mature. It sort of takes the fun out of it.
You know how to get along with each other now, so it's not a problem.
It sort of takes the fun out of the dynamic of the family when, you know, they're all just sort of like off on their own. But I'm looking forward to it.
So look at the last two pages.
Yeah.
Gar turns into a tiger.
Yeah.
So the first page, he's a tiny tiger, by the way. The first panel, you see him as a tiger. He's, second one, whatever. Second page comes in, he's just a boring-ass tiger. It's not a good tiger. You know, come on, put some drama into it.
Yeah.
Maybe he's sad because Wally's hurt. I don't know.
He's sad, like, tiger.
Oh, look, a tiger. Why is he a tiger?
It must be fun.
I guess.
I don't know. This is fine. I liked it. It was solid.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I think it was good, but I think that I was hoping to like it more.
Sure.
But I also recognize, like, I don't actually have much of a relationship with these characters. I haven't read a lot of Titans comics in my life. I know Teen Titans Go better than I know this. And so
Oh, no, it wasn't this comic. It was Cyborg number one. This came out this week, and they had him say booyah in the comic. And I could not believe it after what happened in the Justice League movie. But go ahead.
But, you know, like, maybe I don't understand the relationships with these. So, like, the stuff that we saw between Ollie Queen and Dinah, you know, like, it really resonated because I know them. And so maybe something's happening here I don't know anything about. We'll see. Right. I'm sure it will become more compelling as time goes on.
You'd hope so. But then again, the story, the way they tell stories is different now. They don't do that long soap opera-y stuff as much. You know, back then, everybody was in love with Donna, and Dick and Starfire were falling in love. And, you know, it was like all that stuff that happens when you put young people in, you know, in basically like a college dorm. And it's going to be interesting when the second Titans book, the Mark Waid one, comes out, because it'll be a direct comparison to see how that goes versus this. But
the same characters?
No, that one's going to be focused on the original lineup. So George will be back in the band for that one. But
I don't anyway, want to, but if you want me to, I will.
This was solid.
I could do it all day, and you know it.
This was solid. Let's rate this book, Titans number one, patron pick ratings out of 5. I'm giving it a 3.75.
That's exactly what I was going to say. On a Tom Taylor scale, it's not a high rating.
No. No. But not bad. It was fun.
No.
For sure.
I'm looking forward to more of it. So the question is, are you sticking with it? Yes, of course we are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for it. Also, I'm excited to get Nightwing, the Nightwing book, back to being a Nightwing book and not a Titans book, because the last couple issues have just been a Titans book.
Do you know what else you're going to be excited?
My favorite, they're one of my favorite groups of heroes in all of comics. But you know, I was like, where's
Barbara? You're going to be most excited for next week. You won't have to pick out emails.
So let's do the patron thanks segment where we give a patron at the $5 level a superpower live on the show. And this week's patron who we're thanking is Josh DeRozier.
Or just DeRozier.
DeRozier?
Yeah.
DeRozier?
Or Josh of Roser.
Josh Rosier? Of Roser?
Oh, you think you're rosier than me?
The important thing is he's not Irish.
No.
Josh's power is that he can manipulate the language portion of your brain and change what language you speak and understand at will. He can do that to other people.
Does it remain with you?
No. If he zaps you and makes you only understand and speak German, you until he zaps you back, you're in there. You're moving to Berlin.
Oh, you can no longer speak the other language.
Right. You're done.
Whatever your native language is.
He's changed your receptors. You know, you're in Germantown. You're in German country. There's a lot of yelling. A lot of very aggressive languaging in your house.
Beautiful language. Beautiful language.
I like the German language. I like the German people. I'm just saying, it's a little aggressive. It's a little aggressive.
Yeah.
But yeah, he can zap people. He can zap people. And who else can I insult this episode? I didn't say anything bad about the Germans.
I don't think you did insult the Germans. Although there are probably people who expected you to, because that's kind of, they remain the punching bag.
It's easy. But, I spent an awesome 10 days in Germany once. I was ready to move there. It was great. I love Germany. So nothing bad about them. I'm just saying, Josh will zap you. I love a sausage. I love a beer. I loved having a beer on the sidewalk, walking down the street. I loved the hot chocolate. I loved everything about it. Anyway.
He's not saying he loved the legal brothels. He didn't say it, but he was there between the lines.
He can zap you. Suddenly it's all Mandarin town. Like it's all, you know, whatever he decides to do to you, he can zap you.
That could be very useful.
Oh, sure. He can be very benign and do it helpfully, or he can screw you up. Ancient Aramaic.
I understand French somewhat. I spent a lot of time on Duolingo with Spanish, and I am terrified to break it out because I don't want to sound like a moron. And I'm pretty sure no matter what I say, I'm going to sound like a moron. No, that hasn't come up yet. Actually, there's one French guy who I was right next to him, and I was like, what could you say?
Ça va? Like,
he's got a nice watch. Yeah, but what happens if you just do that? You try to be cool about it, and they're like, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, I used to go to this terrific French cafe in my old neighborhood that went a couple years ago. And it was run by all French people. It was like all the French people in LA would go there. It was like a very legitimate French cafe. So
they allowed smoking?
Well, not. It's still LA.
But
I would always say bonjour, ça va to the guy, because that's what you do when you go into a place in France. But I was always terrified that he would start taking it a step further and.
Right.
And it's like, that's all I got. That's all I got for you.
Cheveux, cafe, silver plate.
I mean, I can order wine and I can order stuff like that, but I can't have a conversation with you about
that. Un vin. Un craft vin, silver plate.
All right.
Baguette.
Oh, they had great baguettes. And then they burned down. They had a fire.
Because of the smoking. Come on.
They had a kitchen fire and it burned down and it has never come back.
I think we know what happened back there. they just saw the fire and like, I don't care.
That's a, yeah. They got very dark about it. We all burn eventually. So thanks, Josh, for being a patron at $5 higher level. You can zap anybody's language center of the brain and change what they can understand and hear and speak and talk and all those things. Use it wisely. Speak and talk are the same thing.
Yes.
That's my Irish side coming out. All right. So we're going to skip the emails because we did some
dumb bits. This will not stand.
We did some dumb bits, but we apologize. But those emails will come back into the show eventually. But if you want to write us in, contact at iFanboy. It's been, to be fair, it has been a long time since we didn't do emails.
It's true.
And then we used to be very bad about it. And we would skip the email segment constantly because of our dumb bits. And then we made a conscious decision amongst ourselves that we would stop doing that, even if we went long.
No one's asking you to justify this.
I'm just saying, it's been a while. All right.
We talked about comics.
There you go.
That's the main thing. And we did that a lot.
contact@ifanboy.com is the email address to write us in to get on the show. And listen, write a great email. Chances are you're going to get on the show. Also, if you want to get on Media Explode, write in an email to contact@ifanboy.com. Put Media Explode in the subject line. We just got a really interesting, good email a couple days ago about Media Explode that I'm excited to get onto the show soon.
And if you happen to be angry about a certain person on the show who's a fucking asshole.
That feels more offensive to me than what I've said.
No, it's not good. It wasn't good.
That
asshole.
Feels like a character.
I'm out of practice. That's what it is.
Here's some plugs. Three weeks ago, we had Josh's Talk Explode interview with Marvel editor Jordan D. White. And go back and listen to that. 2 weeks ago, we had the Guardians of the Galaxy review where Josh and Paul did. Look at you, Josh, all over all these podcasts. And then this past week, Josh again showed up to review The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay with me on our Booksplode show. That just came out. It's right behind the show in the feed. That was a fun show and an interesting discussion. And check that out. And then next week, we have our Media Explode show, which we have to record soon. I don't know what we're talking about. We'll figure that out before it happens.
I love that.
Those are the shows you got going on. When's the next movie one? Spider-Man, 2 weeks. Yeah. We'll figure that out when it happens.
You can find our library of over 1,300 plus shows and counting, which is literally being added to as I speak over at ifanboy.com and wherever podcasts are taken and downloaded, and therefore you listen to them. I don't know what happened there. Follow us at ifanboycomics. Follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, and sometimes it'll be best of the week in panels, sometimes other stuff. I don't know. The team we put in charge of that is awful.
Yeah, they're not just great.
Yeah.
They're lazy. They're Irish. Lazy Irish.
We hired cheap Irish labor. Now, oddly enough,
right off the boat.
Right we're now, like, hey. Irish labor is not cheap. But we used a time travel device, and we went back to
1842. We found the
you're
docks.
Poor and you're wretched.
We had these long sticks. We just whacked them. Get in the truck. What's a truck? Get in the truck.
We gave them baguette, day old baguette. We got a discount. And they were fucking thrilled about it.
Connor and I fight the war. What do you want
Connor
to do?
At C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan. That's us. I feel bad. But
Boss
I'm not
Tweed
sure if
gave
I
us
should.
$10 an Irishman.
Yeah. We've won five times. Or
subscribe to
or
YouTube.
Five times.
What happened on this show?
I don't know.
Subscribe to youtube.com/FM where you'll find our old video shows. We post this show every week, so you can listen to that show there if you'd like to do that. But all our shows are from 13 years ago. Long time. You can find them all there. And please consider leaving a review or a star rating for this show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Any show you listen to, not just ours, would appreciate that. Thank you very much. That's it for this week's show. We're going to go out of here without making one more dumb Irish joke. Until then, I'm Connor.
We brought humor. We brought a love and mastery of language to make you feel things through literature. We tell great stories. We're kind of sad. There's a melancholy. I'll give you that.
You know, I just realized I think I'm more Irish than you because my name is Connor Sean Kilpatrick. You're Josh Adam Flanagan. You could be anything.
Well, I can tell you that my Irish grandmother, who was born here, but only moments after her parents got here from Ireland, she was very, very unhappy that my mother decided to name me Joshua, which to her was a Jewish name. She was from Long Island.
Jesus.
Yeah, well, you know, she's old school. All of her kids are cops. I mean, you do the math. But literally, they wanted to name me Sean Patrick Flanagan.
That would have been awesome.
Well, sure. But, you know.
Should I start calling you Sean?
Kind of hard to stand out in New England like that.
That's true. Hey, Sean. What? Hey, Shawnee.
Brian. Sully. Michael.
Okay. I'm dying from heat. Clearly, my brain's baked. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.